The floor is open for questions. No questions, no dinner.
For the second author,
your name, please.
Anurag Srivastava from Washington State University. Question is for the second author and your assumption about power trajectory prediction. So how do we get the power trajectory?
Sorry, could you please repeat? Could you please repeat the question?
So your three methods, so I think second method was using the power trajectory prediction.
Oh, it was using the historical power consumption,
yes.
And then using that data to see what is a feasible power trajectory.
Yeah, but basically you're trying to fit your load to meet the power trajectory, right?
Oh, right, yes.
So that power trajectory was before demand response or after demand response?
Well, this was just an arbitrary potential trajectory to follow. It wasn't, yeah, it was just a given trajectory to follow.
So the original question was that how do we get that original trajectory?
Okay. So one possibility is you get that from the system operator as a power trajectory because of, for example, renewable generation oscillations or forecast uncertainty, you may get some power trajectory that you need to follow.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. You're on, George.
Okay, so my question to all the presenters is the following. I live in a household with three women, my wife and my two daughters, and I used to be a utility executive, so they still think I'm a utility executive. They don't like to turn off the light after they go into a room and so forth. I want to know what kind of motivation are we going to give to individual users to be responding to the kind of signals we want to see them do, given that we're using this optimal control theory or game theory type of techniques?
I think that could be almost for any of the panelists.
It's for all three panelists. We want to get as many opinions as possible.
Whoever wants to go first, go.
Okay, in my case, it's quite simple because...
state your name, please.
Renato Procopio. Well, in my case, it's quite simple because the SPM is owned by the same subject which owns also the control. So it's our interest to plan in an optimal way and to manage in an optimal way the grid. So it's only one subject which owns and manages the whole grid. So it's basically our own interest.
Only one customer?
Yes, only one.
The other panelists?
Okay, my case, I guess it's more difficult because one option would be monetary incentives, but we have to see how much actually monetary incentives you could offer to each household for such participation, which is something we're exploring now, but we're looking at different options. For example, if the money, for example, from arbitrage making is not sufficient enough to motivate, perhaps there could be some lottery schemes or something that you could...
They don't pay attention to the telephone schemes, which reduce money after 7 o'clock at night. So money is not necessarily going to be an incentive.
Yeah, I mean, there's other incentives you can apply. You can apply, well, other signals you can send other than monetary incentives. Just things like, the behavioral economists and psychologists have been looking at simple things like globes, which glow different colors, depending on what the carbon intensity of your current energy use is in your house at particular times of the day. These simple signals might just prompt them to turn the lights off when they leave a room. But in terms of a more systemic approach, I think things like time of use pricing, tariff structures, probably the the simplest but still fairly coarse way of going.
Okay, I believe we have Ian Hiskins here.
Ian Hiskins, University of Michigan. So firstly, a comment to Archie, guilty as charged. I just thought everyone told the truth, actually, so. More seriously, a comment following up from George. So when people are using cell phones, no one's taking notice of the fact that there's load scheduling that's going on all the time with packets being rescheduled. And they just accept that as being normal. I guess what we envisage is a similar type of strategy for, say, air conditioning or charging plug-in electric vehicles or running pool pumps. You, as a consumer, you don't really care if the energy is being consumed now or a little bit later, so long as it meets some criterion that you've established. For example, with an electric vehicle, that it's charged by a certain time. With air conditioning, that the temperature is about what you set it to. If the utility is sending signals that are interrupting the air conditioning in a way that doesn't really affect you, why do you care?
Okay. Well, that was a comment. Is there any response from the panel? I mean, I think that was just a comment. Okay, Shmuel, you're next. Oh, you have the phone, the microphone already. Okay, I'm sorry. Let her go. You're next. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just in response to the... Elizabeth Ratnam. It's just in response to the time of use pricing. I worked in a utility and we did quite a lot of studies with time of use pricing. We found after about a couple of months, customers no longer cared. So, yeah, I suppose it was just in response to that. It wasn't an incentive at the time. Maybe we didn't price it enough for them to care. But.
We did that 20 years ago.
Okay, another comment. Okay. Is there a need to reply?
No, it's a fair comment.
I think we appreciate the comments. Ashmol, you got the microphone now.
Comment with respect to, you know.
Turn it on.
It's on.
Name?
Shmuel Oren, I want to make a comment regarding the first presentation. I think that the problems that you illustrate with the assumption and all that is more a reflection on the fact that you're looking at demand response in a too granular fashion. I mean, the idea that you control devices and every device will have a comfort function or utility function of some sort to respond, I think it's a dead on arrival. I think, you know, when you go to residential level, I think the role of the aggregator is basically convert retail products which are going to be offered as a quality differentiated service to a wholesale product that is going to be usable by the system operator. And trying to peddle electricity as a commodity at the residential level, I think it's a ridiculous idea, and we tried it in people have talked about that in the 80s, and it never went anywhere. So you can create, a lot of the problems that you described go away if you define, for example, a much more granular, less granular product, like, for example, three-level fuse size that you can interrupt with a certain frequency and treat it as a quality of service differentiation, and then use efficient rationing, which is part of mechanism design, to price those, and then somehow you have to tie it into what's that going to be worth in the wholesale market when you aggregate a lot of interruptible contracts like that on a large population. And they let the consumers figure out when they get the signal that they're going to be interrupted to have their fuse size, have them all their Zigbee devices there and automate whether the one day they may want to watch football, the other day they want to wash their dishes. So we don't have to get down to the device level. I mean, we're doing it in economics all the time, you know. When you talk about theory of the firm has a cost function that reflects all the optimization and all the reallocation and inventory decisions that the firm is making behind closed doors, but what they project to the outside world is one cost function, and we're treating that as the basic quantity, and we're optimizing and we're running markets based on that. So we can do it by asking consumers basically to present a supply function for interruptible kilowatts access to their household, yep. And they'll figure out what to do with that.
Sure, yeah, exactly. So Archie Chapman, the point is, and you said it yourself, you still have to set up a mechanism which elicits this information appropriately, and that might be, you know, a three-level separation of the electricity commodity. But you still have to set up the incentives appropriately. And a second point would be, okay, don't look at the residences, look at the next level up, the interaction between the aggregator and some network operator. Why necessarily would the actions of the aggregator match perfectly with those of the network operator? There's no reason on the face of it why they do, unless they have incentives aligned appropriately. And if you're asking, if a network operator is asking entities outside of its control to implement parts of its own algorithms in a decentralized fashion, you have to take this into account, because there's no reason why they will implement what they say they will. Okay, and this will happen as soon as you have different ownership of parts of the network. This will happen at all layers. The example I gave there was the paper's basically an example built out of residential demand response, but there's no reason why the same problems can't arise up the network as you have different ownership.
But I think the comment that Shmuel had, so one that I would have made if I'd made a question, is there's other ways of designing these programs, and one of them is kind of a maximum interoperability level that you can vary. But I want to elaborate on that. But it's a different concept from the microcontrol. I'm going to let probably three more questions, and I think I saw two over here, and then maybe one more, and then we need to wrap it up. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. I'm Dionisio Albrandt from Purdue. And I think George alluded to this, but he didn't make it crystal clear. So I wanted to ask, and I think this is probably for the second presentation for Mariam, in the context of thermostatically controlled loads as the air conditioning, I thought from what I saw that you optimize trying to minimize the cost, but perhaps it might be interesting to incorporate the comfort in there. So to look at the trade-offs of comfort versus cost. Because for example, I might not want to give up all my comfort just to minimize my daily AC cost. I'm okay to have, you know, some kind of trade-off function, whatever you want to call it. So have you looked into that? What are your thoughts on it?
That's a good point. So in terms of not wanting to give up comfort, I guess the one control method we looked at is non-disruptive. So basically the device is still operating within the temperature dead band that you're setting. So you're not really disrupting the comfort. But if then they are willing to give up some comfort, maybe for making price, that also could be formulated by maybe changing the set point. So I think it could be added as.
I don't think comfort is a dead band. You have a very slight deviation of half a degree and you feel less comfortable immediately. I mean, clearly it's not a dead band, at least for me and perhaps other people too.
I can tell you what I did.
Some people aren't. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you what I did when I was in the interruptible program for Madison Gas and Electric. On hot days, I would set my thermostat in the morning, I'll do it in centigrade to about 14 degrees. And then when they interrupted, I was comfortable the rest of the day. Anyway, there was another question in the back. And then one more after that, if there is. No, there may not be any. Okay.
Okay. Gianfranco Chico from Politecnico di Torino, Italy. Again, with the paper on thermostatically controlled loads. I mean, the focus is on changing the set point. The behavior actually depends on the difference of temperature between the temperature you're setting and the ambient temperature. And there is also an effect of the voltage. I mean, if you are considering what happens during the day, how did you take into account the effects of voltage and of the variation of the ambient temperature? I mean, the one you can use as a reference. Thank you.
Okay, if I'm understanding correctly, basically, are you asking a question about the model where, yeah, so you could have higher order models which they also consider the capacitance in the walls and temperature evolution. So that's something we're exploring. So maybe that's more accurate representation, yeah, of the history. Yeah.
Okay.
Just a very quick follow-up.
Yeah.
So in this case, what you are what you are considering as direct aggregation is the model, a sort of approximated model. I mean, in this case, is the computation burden of using a couple of hundreds of these objects so intractable to need other techniques? Because normally should be, with this kind of model, should be very quick to resolve a problem in a reasonable time step with
So if we're using a higher order model for the individuals, is that whether the computation would be much more? Is that the question?
The question is the computation time for running your simulation prohibitive? Because with this, a couple of hundreds of objects with the kind of model you are using should be very fast.
Yeah, with some of the models, for example, Markov chain or the thermal battery model, it's fast because it's independent of the number of the TCLs, actually, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
well, thank you very much. I think the presenters and I think the audience for being such a good audience. They counted the same number here at the beginning, girls. You're still all here. So I think it's time for dinner. Thank you all.
Just a reminder that dinner tonight is in the hotel. It's the restaurant called Mournier's.